Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts now.
Josette. I love that. Diaz. Josette Diaz. Where did you get that beautiful name from?
My mother, she knew a surfer. She was a surfer in Santa Monica back in the day.
What?
Yeah, I know. Kind of crazy.
I love it. Girl, you couldn't get me out there. I barely get my knees wet. I've been caught in a couple riptides, really. Yeah, well, so I don't even mess with the ocean, you know, unless I'm on a yacht. But thank you for being here. You are my sister here in San Diego. You're a little bit north of me, and you are an amazing individual. We have a lot of associates in common, different groups, different networking groups, but you came to the surface. You know, the cream always rises to the top, as they say. And you are here to share with us, as you've coined yourself, the women's transformational coach. I'm going to ask you a little bit about that. I want to understand a little bit more about NLP. We were talking about that in the green room. That's neuro-linguistic programming, brains. It's that conversation that I want you to start having in your brain. Also, you do Reiki, which is energy work. And I love Reiki. You know, it is the sexiest massage you can have with your clothes on. It is so good. And you coach. You know, you really help people get from A to Z. But yes. What's all that in the middle? And I want to know a little bit about you. I want to know how you decompress and how you reset and how you recharge and who pours into you. So we're going to hear all of that right here on The Edge Brains today with our guest, Josette Diaz. Hello, beautiful.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. I've been following you and watching you. You know, like I said, we got friends in common, honey, and I make sure I'm traveling in the same circle of influence. I don't have no time for no funny stuff.
That's right. No messing around.
That's right. So tell me a little bit about you, or tell my brains a little bit more about you.
Well, let's see. I have been coaching now in my business for about 6 years now. I started my business off as a Reiki practitioner. And my coaching started to develop more and more. I had always wanted to do coaching, and I kind of dabbled in that when I started as a Reiki practitioner back in 2006. And my daughter, my oldest daughter, was getting ready to graduate high school, and we had college to look forward to. And so just the timing wasn't right for me. And when I started my business, I was a practitioner and I was building that. And whenever you do that type of a modality, you're really working with channeling that energy. So for those of you that don't know what Reiki is, it's a natural energy healing modality. So it's where anyone can do it. You don't have to be a special person. You just need to be committed and open and allow yourself to receive so that you can channel the energy through you. It's not of you. And you apply it to people either through gentle touch, or you can hover. You can also do distance as well. So through that process, you learn to open yourself even more spiritually than you might recognize. And it might not even be your intention when you first go into Reiki. And so because of that, it then develops and it moves, because energy is malleable and it takes different shape and it moves where it's supposed to go. And so through that process of working as a practitioner, my coaching just became to rise to the top. It rose, and that's where I was led to be. And so I now use my Reiki in my healing journey meditations, which is a modality that I've created to guide my clients through overcoming different belief systems. moving things out of the way so that they're not limiting themselves, assisting them in resolving obstacles that they've had for a long standing time. I had a client that I worked with that had a block about money, that she was raised with a mother that, you know, said men are supposed to take care of you. And so she didn't want to continue, doing that in her life. It was causing her problems and losing relationships. So we worked.
She tell her, she say, darling, honey, you better marry up, darling.
That's right. Yes. There was an expectation to be taken care of. Absolutely. And it was, you know, really harming her relationships. And so we worked on that through her coaching. And then we did a healing journey meditation that assisted in really allowing her higher self to be in charge and move that block out of the way. And so that's what the healing journey meditations are. And that's where my Reiki now is applied.
Well, you know, Reiki is beautiful. I remember the first time I had it done on me. I was exhausted. I was really exhausted. And I was like, I don't understand this. Why am I so tired? Why am I so drained? And the Reiki master was like, just lay here and just do it. Energy had really been moved. The second time I had done it, I was at a retreat. I was a keynote speaker for women that were living with HIV. And so the facilitator did Reiki on me, and it was weird. She says, you know, you are a force. She says, you have a lot of energy. She said, but be careful with that. She says, because when you open yourself up like that, there's energy thieves. There are people that can steal, you know, or attempt to steal. So now I'm a little apprehensive, massage, meditation, anything. I kind of put this block in between me and the facilitator. Mm-hmm. Only because I'm only going to let so much penetrate me. But that can be a disadvantage because I could be missing a great gift. How do people learn to trust their facilitators? This is some deep work, brains. This is just not, you know, going on and getting some oil slathered on your back. You are going to the deepest core of your soul, your subconscious mind. How do you learn to trust?
That's a really, really good question. Because I think that you may walk into a room with a stranger or someone you don't know very well, right away you already put up a wall. Mm-hmm. You know, trust is already established that it's going to be a challenge for you. So you have to trust yourself. So, you know, being the astute person that you are, you have a very good perception about people. So already you have an advantage. So you know when you meet someone, whether they're okay for you to let your guard down a little bit with, or you're not too sure about them. So you're
three. So you got to have your guard up.
Yes. When your guard is up, you're actually putting up a boundary. So let's reframe it and say, instead of it's a guard, you're actually keeping a boundary that is only there to protect you. That's a responsible thing to do. You're there for self-care. That's also self-care. Boundaries are self-care. So allowing yourself to keep that boundary in place where you can receive what they are there to give you and leave the rest. So anyone who's trying to or attempts to take your energy, that's really on them. It's their issue. They're considered, like, have you heard the term vampire?
Girl, I'm telling you, if they took on some of this energy, they'd be like, "Ooh, hell, where's she at? Let me get this back. Let me get how did she deal with this for all these years? What is she doing?" Right.
Well, that was a mistake.
Yeah, exactly. No, I don't want this one. But it's good. To trust. I have an issue a little bit with that word trust. I'm not very trusting. And I say that with respect. When I meet people, I don't give you 100%. I give you like 65%. You know, we work it up and work it down. Because trust is contingent on another obligation. Say, for example, a relationship. Okay, the man has an indiscretion. So now he's not calling his wife. Well, you know, maybe he's somewhere where he can't call. Well, you didn't call me, so I assume that you were someone else. I can't trust you. If you don't trust me, I mean, if you don't call me every day, you know, blah, 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 I don't trust you. Or, you know, just different situations. So trust, to me, is contingent on an obligation of someone else. There has to be a duality. Okay, honesty, integrity, another big $25 word is authenticity. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, Josette, like I know, everybody can't show up authentic because girl is ugly sometimes.
Yep. Well, so, and
go ahead. But we have to learn to edit and filter. We have to be able to look at ourselves in the mirror and accept our flaws as well. And sometimes be vulnerable and be exposed to that. And that's what I do. You know, when I get into a situation where I'm in a quandary, I say, okay, I'm going to let my guards down. I'm going to let my boundaries down. I'm going to open this thing called trust and see what results from that. And a lot of times, again, it's a part of your intuition.
That's true. And I think that you do need to follow that intuition, that inner voice about people. And there's nothing wrong with not giving your full trust immediately. I think that that actually is very wise, and it's important to listen to yourself, because when you just give all of you and you run around open, that can bring people that will take advantage of you. So that's not really exercising self-care to just be this open person that just says, oh, I trust you until you, you know, right. Screw me over.
Right. And so, I'm waiting for the screw over.
So, well, and that's, you know, that's an area where maybe you might want to look at if you were, you know, expecting someone to.
Absolutely.
Because what you expect, you'll start to bring towards you.
Absolutely. I agree.
So there is a lot to unpack in trust. And there are different ways to deal with that, depending on where you're coming from, what you've been through. Have you experienced, you know, certain levels of trauma?
No, you know, I'm just from South Central LA. I got a ghetto card. I got a PhD. And so, hey, that's called street cred. That's, you know, you gotta deal with an air of caution. And it has really worked in my advantage. Have I missed opportunities? Yes, I've missed opportunities. Am I rude about it? Absolutely not. But am I shrewd about it? Yes. And not just relationship with people. Even the relationship with your kids.
Yeah.
They don't try to manipulate you. Relationships in business.
Mm-hmm.
Relationships with your doctors. You know, I had that with my doctor. I didn't totally trust her either. And right. She was wrong. She was wrong, but that's not that she was a bad person, just what right. She said, I needed to do more investigation. And mm-hmm. So there's people like you that help others do that deep dive and do that investigation, investigational work to clear those blockages and to, you know, set you free from your apprehension and allow you to trust. And I respect that. Tell me a little bit about your coaching. What is it? Number one, the word coaching.
Mm-hmm.
What does define that for me? Your definition.
So my definition is that I set myself to be a guide and a champion. So whenever I work with women, first I'm a listener. I want to know what's their objective in wanting to coach. And then we're going to start to unpack what it is that they are having obstacles with. And then we start over from there. And then I guide them through various unpeeling the onion, so to speak. So we do different exercises. I give them different ways to get down to those layers, because my purpose is really to teach my clients to do all of that for themselves for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to stay obligated to a coach for, mm-hmm. you know, 2 years. That's not really the purpose of what I do.
Right. I mean, if that's the case, they would probably stick with talk therapy.
Right. Exactly. Yes. And so we want to move you from where you start. So I meet you where you're at. And then we go through this process so that you hit your objective on the other end. Now, that can be goals. It can be personal issues. It can be decisions that you're trying to make, whatever that is.
What's your why? you know, okay, everybody gets off, for the lack of a better term. But, you know, they do. What sparks your adrenaline? Sometimes it's money. Sometimes it's power. Sometimes it's influence. Sometimes it's control. Sometimes it's manipulation. And I don't mean manipulation in a negative type of way. Manipulation means to move, you know. Right. Is it that the joy that you see in people? Is it, you know, you're racking up your rewards for heaven? What is your why?
My why is very deeply connected to who I am at my core. And that has to do with wanting to, I have a deep desire to expand the human consciousness to think deeper. That's my why when it comes down to it. Okay. I have a real deep desire to do that with people.
Okay. Is that from a spiritual perspective? Not religious, but spiritual. Do you, when you go into Reiki, mm-hmm. some people say they go into a trance-like state. They go into a trance-like state so that they're able to channel, so that they're able to reach that fifth dimension. Because we're not all on the same plane, you know.
Right.
So is there a reward that you feel inside your heart?
Oh, yes. Is
there a joy that you feel inside your heart?
Does it yes.
make you want to eat a piece of chocolate?
It's almost better than that.
Goodness.
It's a yes, and that's a really good point to bring up. It is a spiritual calling that I feel. And so I don't have a why that, you know, I want to be a big influencer. My why has to do with really touching and changing people at their core level and giving them the avenue in which to move forward for themselves so that they become their own leader, their own guru, so to speak, that they're listening to themselves before anyone else, that they're following their own wisdom. So that's my big why. And spiritually speaking, it's true. When you are doing things like Reiki, that opens you up to listening to that deeper voice within you that can get louder and louder. And so you're making a connection really to your higher self, which is your spiritual self or your overall personality. Just to kind of simplify it a little bit.
So many people are still confused after COVID and all this other nonsense. They are still confused. They're still looking at that mirror reflection in of that person in the mirror. But you know, Reverend Al Sharpton told me something one day. He said, baby, he said, that mirror is not just for reflection. It's also a place for you to stand up and make a correction. Yeah. Lipstick is not on right. When your tie is not right. He said, that's a place for you to look inside yourself.
Yeah.
So we have to go deep. We have to really go deep, brains. This COVID, I tell people all the time, this is the perfect pause. Mm-hmm. This is the perfect timeout for everybody on the planet. Right. I don't care whether you like it or not. Whether you're vaccinated or not, whether you wear a mask or not, I don't care about none of that. You got to stop whatever you're doing and you got to play to somebody's piper. What has all this taught you? This pause, this, mm-hmm. you know, what has this taught you about yourself?
I think that it taught me to put up my boundaries more stronger for myself. It let me see what I really needed to function in a much more efficient way. I tend to be a really great multitasker, and that can get me into trouble because I'll say yes a lot, and that doesn't always help me. And so through the 2020, I learned a lot about what I really needed to really take care of myself and where I was letting myself run ragged.
I know, because my husband, he tells me, he says, multitasking, baby, there's no such thing. He says, you cannot give your undivided attention to one thing without trying to mix it in with something else. He says, something's going to happen.
Yeah.
And so I tried to do that. I try to slow down. Now, I do have multiple projects. Mm-hmm. When I'm focused on one, I try to focus on one. So I understand about boundaries. So you told me that you have, what, two daughters?
I do, yes.
Tell me a little bit about your daughters and what you're sharing with, as a mother, you know, as a friend,
mm-hmm.
but also as a coach and a counselor. What are you pouring into them?
I have really taught both of my girls to be confident in themselves, and I think they're very good at doing that. They're human, so it's not perfect every day. We don't always walk around feeling confident, yet that's something that I instilled in them. I instilled them to be independent, to be strong, to look at where things are coming from within them so that they can have good boundaries, so that they can see their life through a filter of an observer. Mm. And I think for the most part, they're doing really great. You know, my oldest is 32. She has a great career, a lovely man in her life, and a cute little dog. So she's doing well.
Jealous, I want a dog.
She has an adorable little doxy. And my youngest is in college in New York, and she's a performing arts major. So she has a lot of ability to reflect because she's an actor. And so that is what I've done with my girls, to really instill in them to always look at themselves and to consider that everyone is coming from their own perception. So they're isn't a lot that they have to take on all the time, and to just recognize that conflict is always going to come, and to step back and look at the best approach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My daughter is such a creative. I've had to reel her in. She's like me. My husband taught her how to sew. I didn't know how to sew.
Nice.
And now she's an amazing makeup artist and costume designer. That's what so I've had cool. to pour into her is to establish boundaries, because she'll give you 100% all the time.
Right, right.
But it hasn't steered her wrong. Well, yeah, a couple times it's steered her wrong. But you know what? I've also taught her to accept responsibility for her decisions.
Yeah.
And I hate to say it, but I am one of those mothers. I will tell you, I told you so. You know, some people say, oh, I never say I told you. I will tell her I told you so, because I want to reinforce it. I want to imprint it. Mm-hmm. I want you to remember.
Right.
Because the things that hurt us the most in life are our best teachers.
That's so true.
And, you know, fear, mm-hmm. a lot of people say, oh, I don't believe in fear. Fear is a warning sign.
Well,
it's a very valuable emotion. I don't want to live in that space.
No.
But I do want to know that, you know, that if you stick a pin in a light socket, there's going to be a reaction for your action.
Right.
And there's going to be pain, but there's also going to be great joy.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk to you. Tell me a little bit about your program, and then we're going to play a round of quick questions. I'm going to throw out some stuff, and I just want to hear what you're going to have to say, Josette.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Tell me about your program first.
So I've created Seasons of the Soul coaching program. And the concept around Seasons of the Soul is to use the seasons to identify your inner voice and to start to really learn how to follow your own natural rhythm. So you can use your winter time, which is all about reflection. It's time for you to rest. And if you really start looking at your life when you go through change, there's different stages of change, but alongside that, you have certain moments where you feel just like you want to shut everybody out and you're ready to just rest. And then once you have had the time to reflect and you start moving out of that, you start feeling these inspirations that you gathered up in a winter time, you then move into spring, where that's time for you to prepare, to start gathering knowledge, to really start developing those inspirations into possible goals. And then once you get to that place at the end of your spring, where you are ready to start putting some things into action, you've moved naturally into summer. And summer is all about taking action. And what I do in my coaching program is really give special moments of reflection in each of these different seasons. Because once you finish all of that action, you know as well as I do, when you implement something, that's when all kinds of stuff starts coming up. You start getting challenged. You then have your boundaries tested. And so we examine all of that in your summer. And then once summer starts to wind down, you then are looking back at those implemented goals and you start editing out what works and doesn't work, what could work better next time. And so that's when you start to slow down again. So the way that I've designed Seasons of the Soul coaching program is to provide you with a system, a framework that works in your life, in your personal life, your professional life. You can use it to make decisions with. So I can be standing in my personal life in a summer where I'm doing all kinds of great things in my relationships. And then in my professional life, I'm in a winter. I'm starting to think, maybe I need to do something else, or I'd like to add something, or whatever it is. And I can also, at the same time of doing those two things in different seasons, I may have a decision that I need to make, and I can go through all four seasons in 10 minutes. So it's really a framework and a system that allows you to lean on when you're in those uncomfortable moments in your life.
Mm-hmm. And that makes perfect sense. But I know it's hard for you to do because we're in California and we're in summer yes. all the time, you know.
Right.
Beautiful San Diego. What is your favorite thing about living in San Diego, America's finest city?
I think it's the coast. I live a little bit inland, but it's easy for me to access the coast. And I like it that way because so many people go to the coast. So I can go when I want to and have my quiet solitude, which is something that works for me. And I would say the coast.
I love San Diego. I'm originally from Los Angeles. You know, I'm a city girl. And it's just a softer sell.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you don't agree. Have a lot of the anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm using big $25 words, you know, of Los Angeles, the hustle, the bustle, the smell, there's a certain traffic. Smell. What? Yeah. The traffic. During COVID, I'm telling you, when I would go up to LA, I couldn't believe I could see the skyscrapers. I could see the basin. It was beautiful. And now it's all different.
Right.
What's your favorite color?
Magenta.
Oh.
It's also my branding color because it is my favorite color.
Okay. Why?
There's something that is regal about it that I feel attracted to. It also feels deep and there's like a yummy energy to it.
Okay. So what's your favorite animal?
I have to say I love dogs.
Yeah, because you know, dog is God spelled backwards.
That's right, it is.
It is. If you were an animal, what animal would you be and why? Or if you were a dog, what breed of dog would you be?
I think I would rather be a bird, and I'd probably be a hummingbird, maybe.
Oh.
Because I like hummingbirds.
My husband has a hummingbird that comes and sits on his shoulder. I can't believe when he's yes, in the yard, and he named her Summer Blossom. I told him she don't get away from here trying to suck on my nectar. She will, and she's
unbelievable.
She comes, she comes back and she loves him. She loves him. If I was an animal, I'd probably be a party animal.
I love that. Okay, I change my mind. I'll be a party animal with you.
You're going to be a party animal with me? All right. What is your superpower, Josette?
That's a good one. My superpower. I believe that my superpower is my ability to connect with most people.
That's a gift. If I had a superpower, I'd probably like to move through time. I like to be a time traveler.
Yeah.
I think I could do some cool stuff. What raises your fear? What are you afraid of?
I think the biggest trigger that I have around fear is survival. That triggers my fear.
Okay. So when you say survival, you mean that getting into a situation that you are not able to control and survive, or the uncertainty of a situation that raises anxiety and fear?
Uncertainty. That's something I've had to work through a lot.
Sometimes, I know this sounds weird, but sometimes I welcome fear, because that is when I am in my, I call it a teachable moment.
Yes.
You know, it's a teachable moment, because again, it's uncertainty. You don't know. You don't know what you don't know.
That's right.
And sometimes you do yourself a disservice by not allowing yourself to feel that fear. I can handle everything. I'm super strong. This will never happen. And then, you know, you crash and burn. And you're like, wow, what happened? Or people that create vision boards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I do a vision board workshop, I always have these little things that say stop, or little triangles that say move, because there's obstacles. Everything is not going to be that straight trajectory straight up.
Yep.
You got to allow yourself some time to level up. You got to allow yourself some time to step back.
Yep.
You've got to feel the feelings.
That's right. And when you have fear, it's a really good opportunity for you to chunk down what that fear is.
Yeah.
And then that usually you'll start to see pieces start to fade away.
Exactly.
And then you really can recognize that there's not a legitimate fear.
Right. Because it was something that you didn't know. My mother used to say, you better be afraid of the stuff you do know instead of the stuff that you don't know. Bless her heart. What brings you happy tears?
My kids.
Oh, that's sweet. And what brings you joy outside of your kids, outside of a cute little dog, outside of a piece of chocolate? What brings you just joy?
I feel that when I focus on the things that I feel really happy and blessed to have in my life, such as really great women that I know, you know, wonderful friendships that I have, those are the types of things that bring me joy, that I've blessed my life.
Gratitude. I appreciate gratitude.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question about men. We've talked about women.
Right.
You got a man client. What would be some things that you might want to have him unpack? Just random things. I mean, you know, where would you start with a man client?
I've had a couple of male clients before, and I don't generally work with men, yet I'm not adverse to working with men. So if I had a male client, it would really depend on what they wanted to do. I would do the same thing that I would do with a woman client, in the sense that I would look at their objective, and then where are we right now, and start to unpack where we need to go. That will take us in different places than it would with a female client, most likely. And it really would just depend on what they wanted.
Yeah,
I think that my approach really wouldn't differ, because I coach from my own center of who I am. And I then adapt that to who I'm working with. Mm-hmm. So I meet everyone where they are.
Yeah.
And whether it's a female or a male, I would take the same approach.
Well, that's big, because I wouldn't. I go right to the mommy issues. Absolutely. I go right to the mommy issues, you know, because the relationship, I look at how my husband, you know, loved his mother, how he loved my mother. He'd come here, my mother was dying. He'd come in here and hug and kiss her and bypass me. But then he would come back and say, baby, how can I serve? You know, what can I do to make it right for you? Men's issues are different than women's issues. But I would look at it from a nurturing perspective.
Right.
Women are, you know, we're just empaths. I put it out there, in nature. We absorb everybody's feelings. We want to be the one that takes care of them, where men are more standoffish and they want to be taken care of. So, you know, kind of looking at them. So maybe that's why I'm not a coach in that respect, because I would just say, well, Bob, how'd you get along with your mom?
We might get there, April. You know,
I want to go there first. And then we can figure out, okay, because to me, it's a trickle-down effect of how you treat your female employees, how you treat your wife, how you treat your daughter, how you look at yourself. How do you nurture and take care of yourself? Are you narcissistic? Do you care? Do you understand? So I don't know. Mine will be a little bit different. But again, that's why we do what we do. That's why I podcast and you coach. You're wonderful. Now, what is your favorite food?
Oh, gosh, that's a hard one because I like a lot of different things.
I'm a foodie too.
Yes, I'm a big foodie. I love a good charcuterie board. That gives variety. What's that?
Can you make one?
No, but I have a really good friend who makes delicious.
Oh, try to make one. They're fun. They are really fun. My daughter made one, a breakfast, brunch one.
Ooh.
And I couldn't believe all the little things. She had all these different little jams. And
that's a great idea.
A little cottage cheese. And, you know, because usually you're thinking of more hors d'oeuvres, kind of, you know, pickles and
right.
veggies and all that kind of stuff. So good. Well, that's fun. So you're a woman that loves variety. You're a woman that loves great, beautiful colors. You love animals. You love to party. and, you know, you're not afraid of fear. You tackle it head on, and you do cry happy tears. And I am so glad I've had to get to know you. I'm going to come up and hug you. We'll meet really close, okay? And
that'd be great.
Sit and have some coffee and really kind of do some brainstorming, and maybe you can open up my trust issues. Because it's a vault. I'm telling you, it's a combination, baby. You better believe it. Please tell my brains how to get in contact with you. I'd love for them to work with you. You know, call for a consultation. Go in and watch her Facebook Lives. They're very engaging. Her voice tone and inflection is hypnotic. You know, she just puts you in a state of comfort and peace the whole time. I could never see her getting upset at anything or anybody. So
it happens.
She'd be a great person to work with. And men, you know, reach out. There might be something valuable that she might learn. That's just not her target. She likes to work with women, but there's an insight there. There's a valuable insight and something that we can all learn and grow from, because we have to coexist on this planet.
That's true.
Now, how do they get you, baby?
Okay, so I do what I call a coffee chat, which is a free 30-minute session with me, and you can book that through calendly.com/guidance-to-wellness. You can go to my website, which is guidance-to-wellness.com, and you can check out my Seasons of the Soul there. I also have a private Facebook group for women called the Seasons of the Soul Sisterhood. So you can reach out to me there, and my business page is at Guidance to Wellness on Facebook.
Well, you're doing a lot of wonderful things. Thank you so much for being open and honest, and let me ask you questions and laugh and enjoy, you know, about 45 minutes with you. You are definitely truly a gift, and brains, take advantage of it. You do yourself a disservice because you don't know what you don't know. Here on The Edge, we want you to sign up for everything. I need you to love, like, share, subscribe. Don't cost you nothing but a point and a click. And your heart can forever be elevated in a good space. They'll rise you like Reiki. All right, brains. I'll talk to you soon. Thank you so much, Josette. I love that name. Just rolls off your tongue.
Thank you, April, for having me.
Absolutely. Be a blessing.